Be in the city?
She nodded. It's not so far. She slipped her hand under his arm. You have your work, and I have mine, so maybe we can just go on. I'll come into the city some weekends, or you can come out here.
You could buy a little blimp.
She laughed. I'm not sure it'd be much faster.
True. But you know what I mean.
I think so. Yes. I will fly to you. He felt a deep breath fill him. Nitrogen narcosis. Breeze off the land. A calmness that he hadn't felt in so long. He could not name the feeling. Couldn't understand it. Could scarcely feel it. It was so strange a sensation.
That sounds good, he said. I would like that.
The next morning he went back up on deck. He had slept in Idelba's bed with her and slipped out just at dawn, leaving her asleep, mouth open, looking girlish, a middle-aged Maghrebi woman. It was amazing to stand on the bridge of the tug and look up and down the coast. Far to the east, the boiling white reefs marked where Rockaway Beach had been. It seemed a huge distance, and yet it was a tiny fraction of Long Island, which was invisible beyond Breezy Point. Then, in the other direction, it was such a clear morning that it was possible to see not just Staten Island, but the glints of morning window blink from Jersey. The Bight of New York, split by the Narrows. At the end of the Ice Age, Mr. Hexter had told them, a glacial lake had filled the Hudson Valley, from Albany down to the Battery. The melting ice of the Great Northern Ice Cap had filled it higher and higher and higher, until finally the waters had burst through the Narrows and poured down to the Atlantic, which at that time was many miles to the south. For a month or so, the outflow was 100 times greater than the flow of the Amazon, until the long lake was drained. After that, the Narrows were carved deep, and when the Atlantic rose far enough, the glacial lake had refilled as the fjord and estuary they had now. Under the blue waves Vlade now looked at, that Hudson outbreak flood had left a submarine canyon that still cut the continental shelf. Vlade had dived its walls in his youth. A very impressive underwater canyon, scoring the continental shelf all the way out to the drop-off to the abyssal plain. All that wild depth, all that cataclysmic history, now hidden by a smooth blue sheet of water, slightly wrinkled by an onshore breeze on an ordinary autumn morning. So, maybe he was the lake. Maybe he was the outbreak through the Narrows. Maybe Idelba was the mighty Atlantic. There would never be an end to it. One must imagine Sisyphus happy. And it was easy to do on a morning like this. Then election day came, and Charlotte won. Idelba came into the city and joined them all in the Met's common area for a big party. She helped Vlade get the common room ready, and of course, for a thing like this, there was no shortage of help. The Flatiron also wanted to host a celebration, and they talked about filling the entire 6 acres of Madison Square Bacino with boats, so they could lay a temporary floor of interlocking platforms and dance right on the water, as they would have if the freeze of this coming winter had yet arrived. It was discussed at length, and then abandoned as too much trouble. But what it meant was that the party had to be spread out, a progressive moving from rooms to rooftops to terraces all around the square, and onto big boats in it. And indeed, in the end, they placed gangplanks connecting 8 barges to each other and to many of the buildings ringing the square, and people wandered around all night long partying. Quite a few partiers fell in the drink. Charlotte herself didn't show up until midnight, having gone to work that day as if it were a normal day. She was irritated at having to stop the normality when she got home, and even more irritated that she was going to have to stop it for good. She had proposed continuing to head the householders' union while serving in Congress. There was no law against that, she said, but most people hoped she would finally come round to seeing how impractical it would be. Not to mention some kind of conflict of interest. I plan to come back every weekend, she declared in her brief concession to giving a victory speech. I don't know how, given the way this storm hammered the rail lines, but I will. I don't like it down there. People cheered. Damn it, she went on when urged to continue. This is horrible. Being elected, I mean. But also what's happened to the city. It'll take years to regrow the trees and rebuild. It's such a big job, it's probably best to think of it as some kind of cosmic demolition that allows us to start over. That's how I'll be thinking of it. We're in the middle of another crash, headed for another big recession. Every time this happens, there's an opportunity to seize the reins and change direction, but up until now, we've chickened out. And besides, our government has been bought by the people causing the crash, and we don't even know what to try for. This time, we'll see if we can do better. The new Congress has a lot of new members, and there's a pretty great plan coming from the progressives. I think Teddy Roosevelt announced his presidential bid as candidate of the Progressive Party from right here on this square, and he ran that campaign from our Met Tower. Actually, I think he lost, but whatever. I'll hope to be as cheerful and tough and effective as he was. I'll go join the people trying to do that. But damn. She looked at them, sighed. I'd rather be here among my friends. You are certainly all welcome to come down and visit me when I'm in D.C., and I'll be here as much as I am there, I swear. After that, Ettore and his piazzolistas set up and ripped off some torrid tangos for the crowd to dance to. Between songs, Ettore wiped his brow and told everyone, with his hand drunkenly on his heart, that the great Astor, Piazzolla himself, had grown up just a few blocks south of where they stood at that very moment. "Holy New York," he said. "Holy New York." The Buenos Aires of the North. After another song, standing out under the prow of the Flatiron, Vlade and Idelba watched as Franklin's friend Jojo approached Charlotte and congratulated her. Charlotte thanked her and then called Franklin over and asked them to discuss how they could coordinate their Soho and Chelsea redevelopment projects, such that they combined strengths and both got better. Franklin and Jojo agreed to this with a handshake and went over to the drinks table to see if they could find an unopened bottle of bubbly. Vlade stood in front of Ettore's band, swaying to a milonga, feeling the outbreak flood pour through him. Idelba said she was tired and headed over to his office. When the band had played its last song, Vlade walked over to the Met with Charlotte, steering her over the looser gangplanks. She seemed wasted. In the dining room, she sat down heavily next to Amelia Black and Gordon Hexter. Vlade sat across from them. "Maybe you can settle Stefan and Roberto in my room," she said to Vlade. "They can house-sit the place for me." He gave her a look.
"Won't you need it when you come back to visit?"
"Sure, but I can sleep in one of the other dorms, or they can. With the best will in the world, I won't be around that much. Not at first." She looked so tired. Vlade put a hand to her arm.
"It will be okay," he said. "We'll help out here. The building will be fine. And I think you needed a change of pace anyway. Something new."
She nodded, looking unconvinced. Trying to get a hold on some kind of bitterness, some kind of grief. Vlade didn't get it. Well, joining Congress as a plan to slow down, probably not realistic. Maybe it was just that she liked what she had been doing. Franklin Garr came breezing in, saw them, and came over and leaned down to give Charlotte a hug and a kiss on the head. "Congratulations, dear. I know it's just what you always wanted." "Fuck you." He laughed. He was flushed and seemed a little giddy, maybe from talking to his friend from the Flatiron.
Just let me know if there's anything I can do for you. Finance minister without portfolio, right?
You're already doing that, she objected.
Redevelopment czar, Robert Moses meets Jane Jacobs.
You're already doing that, too.
Okay, so maybe you don't need me.
No, I need you.
But not for anything more than what I'm already doing.
She looked up at him, and Vlade saw a new look on her face, an idea she liked.
Well, I wonder, she said. Could you give me a ride in your stupid little speedboat down to, like, Philly or Baltimore? Would that work? Because I need to get down there fast as I can, and the train tracks in Jersey are still fucked up.
He was startled, Vlade could see.
Might have to recharge, he said.
He looked at Vlade.
How far is it?
You got me, Vlade said. Couple 100 miles? How far will your boat go when you got it up on the foils?
I don't know. Pretty far, I think. Anyway, I can check it out, but...
Yeah, he said to Charlotte.
Of course. Love to take you down there to your coronation.
Please.
Your investiture.
You're the investor.
Your congressification.
She cracked a smile. Something like that. My befucking...
Oh, no, dear, you don't have to go all that way for that.
Hey, I gotta take a call. I'll come down in a while and we can celebrate.
No,
she called out after him, but he was off to the elevators. Charlotte looked at Vlade.
A nice young man, she said.
They all stared at her.
Really?
Vlade said. Charlotte laughed.
Well, I think so. He tries to pretend otherwise, but it keeps breaking out.
Maybe for you.
Yes.
She thought things over.
How fast does that thing of his go?
Too fast, like 70 or 80 miles an hour.
And battery charge?
It might have enough to get you there.
Is it safe?
No.
But people do it.
Oh yeah, people do everything.
Okay. Maybe I will.
You could always get a ride with Amelia on her blimp.
Oh, yeah, there's a good idea.
They all laughed together, even Amelia.
It's not my fault,
she protested, but they only laughed more. When they had collected themselves, Charlotte said to Vlade,
So what about Idelba? Where is she?
She went to bed. But she's going back out to Coney Island to keep working.
And so what will happen?
Vlade shrugged.
We'll see when it happens.
But you went back over there with her.
Yeah.
He tried to think how to say it.
It seems good. I think it could work. I don't know how. I mean, I don't know what I mean by that.
Well, that's good.
Yes, I guess it is.
Very nice, she said. I'm happy for you.
Well, me too.
At the 1964 New York World's Fair International Pavilion, all 22 of the visiting Burundis slept in a single room, just as they would have at home. One thought, ever at the fore. That in the divine ship, the world, breasting time and space, all peoples of the globe together sail the same voyage, are bound to the same destination. I see freedom, completely armed and victorious, and very haughty, with law on one side and peace on the other. A stupendous trio, all issuing forth against the idea of caste. What historic denouements are these we so rapidly approach? Walt Whitman.
E. Franklin. So it had got to the point where I looked up Charlotte Armstrong in the cloud and found out that she was 16 years older than me. 16 years, 2 months, and 2 days. This was a kind of a shock, a blow, a mind fuck. Not that I didn't think she was older than me, and we had already gone very far into our young man, old woman shtick, but really I was thinking it was more like, I don't know. As I hadn't been thinking of her that way at all, I just thought of her as a middle-aged woman. Old, for sure, but not that old. I didn't know what to make of it. I was stunned to a blankness. So when she called me to talk more about getting an ocean zoom down to D.C., I said, "Yeah, sure," squeaking like a boy whose voice was changing. I said, "When?" rather than, "Hey, babe, I like you, but why are you so fucking ancient?" which was on the tip of my tongue. I had to actually bite my tongue not to blurt that out. Not that she wouldn't have laughed if I had, and so I was tempted, because making her laugh was a distinct pleasure, a little hook in my heart that drew a helpless smile on my face every time. But I restrained myself, being so confused. And she named a date for our trip, and then took me far from those concupiscent thoughts with the following. "So did you hear that Inspector Jen's data hound cracked Morningside and found out who was making those offers on our building?" "No. Who was it?"
"Angel Falls. That's your guy, right? Hector Ramirez?"
"No way."
"That's what she said. Her guy got into Morningside by way of one of the security firms they were using. He got all kinds of stuff, and that was in there."
"Damn," I said. "Holy shit, fuck. Okay, listen, I'm going to go ask him about it. You know, with the offer on the Met gone away, I don't know if it matters anymore. But he's an angel investor in the Chelsea Raft. And the building here was getting fucking sabotaged, right? No, I'm going to talk to him about it." So I took the bug out to the Hudson, cutting through traffic like a butcher knifing through joints, then zoomed up the big river. Cloudy day, water the color of flint, disturbed as if schools of tiny fish were swirling around just under the surface. Got Hector's secretariat to ask him for a meeting in the flesh presently, and he said he was about to leave but could meet briefly with me, if it was in the next hour. I said I was already there. Past the salt marsh where I had had my eelgrass satori, up the staircase of the gods to the Munster, up the rocket launch of an elevator. Burst in on Hector in his sky island, his evil villain mastermind Airy, where I said, enunciating articulately, "Hector, what the fuck?"
What the fuck?
"Why were you trying to buy the MetLife Tower? What kind of shit was that?"
"No shit, youth. No shit at all. It was just one of a number of bids my people have been making in Lower Manhattan recently."
He spread his hands in the classic gesture of total innocence.
"It's like you've been telling me. It's a great place these days. The Super Venice. Very nice investment. Nothing but upsides down there. I don't get your dismay here."
"The Met was getting attacked," I said hotly. "Your people were sabotaging it to try to scare the residents into selling." This caused him to frown.
"That I didn't know. I'm not sure I believe that."
"It was definitely happening. They've got it tracked to a security firm called RNA, Rapid Noncompliance Abatement. Very cute fucking name. The Met was noncompliant, and these clowns were rapidly abating us."
"I would never condone something like that," Hector said. "I hope you know me well enough to know that."
I stared at him. I realized that in fact I did not know him anywhere near well enough to know any such thing. He knew that too, so it was a strange thing to say. I had to pause to ponder, and still came up with nothing. Smoke screen in my eyes. He was even smiling a little, perhaps at his little piece of pointing out the thin ice under us.
"Hector," I said slowly, "I know you well enough to know you wouldn't do something that stupid. Not to mention criminal. Joint enterprise laws, right? But you run a big organization, and no doubt you delegate a lot of the ugly parts of real estate work out to various security firms. RNA is just one sucker on that octopus arm. And what they are really like, you can't really be sure about. So there, in that, you are vulnerable and not doing due diligence because you are legally responsible for what they do when you hire them. Remember what you used to say when I was working for you? When the people who understand the instruments are divorced from the people who are trading the instruments, bad things can happen. This is just another version of that. You have got people working for you, doing various kinds of dirty work without you knowing about it, and supposedly that keeps you clean, but it's dangerous because they're idiots. And that makes you, if not an idiot, then at least responsible for idiotic shit. Legally responsible. He regarded me. I will take in what you say, he said. I will make adjustments accordingly. I hope your harsh opinion here won't interfere with our work together on the project you have going in Chelsea. We're buying you out of that, I said. I'll be wiring you your money later today. I don't know if you can do that. I definitely can. The contract I used was the one we use at Water Price to keep control of our investors' comings and goings. It's seriously bomb-proof. I see. He nodded, looked at his desk. I'm sorry you feel that way, but I'm sure we'll go on to work on other things. Maybe we will. Here, youth. Sorry to run out on you, but I really was scheduled to leave. I delayed my departure to talk to you, but my crew is getting antsy. Come up and see me off. Sure. He led me to a different elevator, a huge freight elevator, big enough to hold I don't know what. Elephants? We went up one or two floors and got out on the very top of the Munster, where Hector's little sky village was tethered. 21 balloons, all prisming bulbously, straining at the leash to loft away. The round platform underneath them was just smaller than Hector's office, and mushroom-shaped cottages around the circumference and the middle were connected by clear tubes like little sky bridges. Some kind of beautiful little folly. Lots of people already on board up there cocktail partying, including several at the top of a gangplank stairway, waiting for Hector. He smiled genially at me, shook my hand. Good luck to you, youth. We'll meet again in another context. No doubt. He walked up the gangplank, and a crew on the roof rolled it aside. With a final Wizard of Oz wave to me, he turned away, and the sky village lofted straight up, rose swiftly, and spun off east into the clouds. So that was that. Trouble in River City. And a lesson for me going forward, the octopuses have very long arms, and more than 8 of them. Maybe they are like giant squids, if squids have more than 8 tentacles. It was troubling. But now I had to get my Charlotte down to D.C. I had arranged for her to get off her last day of work early. Last day, for the time being, she had told her people, she was just taking a leave of absence. She was not really quitting. She would be back ASAP. And I could imagine her people actually believed this, because I did. So I had gotten her then to proceed from her office west to the rebuilt Pier 57, where I would come into the rebuilt marina and pick her up, and off we would go, out the Narrows and south. I had stocked the bug for a night at sea if necessary, but I had in mind a marina on the Maryland shore as being easier, after which we would zip up the Chesapeake to Baltimore, and I would drop her off at the New Harbor station to hop over to D.C. Did I hope that JoJo and the rest of the gang would see me picking up our new congressperson representing the 12th District of the state of New York to depart down the Hudson and away to the nation's silly capital? Yes, I did. And indeed it turned out as I had hoped, because as I pulled into the marina and lifted my chin to the gang at the bar, JoJo was among them, pretending to talk to someone, ostentatiously not looking my way. Our supposed reconciliation and business cooperation pact, enacted at Charlotte's behest, meant nothing to her. This was what her refusal to look my way conveyed. I saw that, and she saw that I saw it. That's how good people are, with sidelong glances and their peripheral vision and their eyes in the backs of their heads. And then Charlotte appeared, walking onto the marina dock, punctual as usual, weighed down by two fat shoulder bags and clumping along with that little limp she has. A solid woman, carelessly curvy, dressed for business. Not precisely what you hope to see in a woman's figure. Not that I care about that. I mean, not that that's all I care about. For instance, JoJo had a great figure, sure. Very trim and well-proportioned, classic features everywhere. Neat and attractive without anything being extravagant, you might say. Neat. Fine. And I had liked her, sure. I had been very attracted, and it still hurt that she had given up on me, broke it off with me, whatever that had been. Actually, she had ripped off my idea and then accused me of ripping it off from her. And now we would be collaborating as we went forward. Maybe that's the way it happens. Nothing unusual. Anyway, it hurt, and I still wanted her. I looked at her with a little clutch in my heart and elsewhere. But on the other hand, take Amelia Black, the star of the Met and the Cloud and the World. She was over the top, not just neat, but compelling. Not just perfect, but interesting. And because for years she had had a professional and or personal propensity for getting naked on her show, I had not been able to avoid noticing along with the rest of humanity that she also had a spectacular figure, with the extra splashes on a big, rangy frame that certainly made for at least part of her popularity, that and her goofy, sweet character. And yet I didn't have the slightest interest in her in that way. She didn't have the slightest appeal. Of course I liked to look at her, and she was nice. She had even done good things in our recent little euthanasia of the Rentier campaign, wielding the initial bolt clippers to the chokehold they had on our fiscal necks. But I didn't want to spend time with her. I wasn't interested in her. No clutch at heart or elsewhere. As far as I could tell, no offense, she wasn't interesting. Or something. Who knows what these kinds of reactions really come down to? Pheromones we don't consciously detect? Telepathy? Or just a case of being too perfect, too nice? Charlotte Armstrong was not perfect or nice. Good, but not nice. And good is more important than nice. Grumpy and sharp-edged, and as I said, solid in form. And 16 fucking years older. Right now, I was 34, which meant she was, oh my God, 50. 50 years old. She might as well be 80. Okay, big deal. So what? Because she made me laugh. And what's more, I made her laugh. And I wanted to make her laugh. This was becoming something I was trying for. I mean, really trying for. I angled what I did to please Charlotte Armstrong, to make her laugh. I looked around for things to do or say that would get that response from her. These days, it was my main priority, it seemed. That being the case, on this afternoon, I got the bug up to speed and we lifted off the water and flew like a bird. Like that bird called the shearwater, which you sometimes see out in the Atlantic skimming the waves, and which I once heard never lands at all, just lives and sleeps and dies at sea, an idea that I find strangely appealing, especially when flying in the bug, which it occurred to me I should christen the Shearwater. We shot out the Narrows under the big bridge, and in my mind I named it that very moment in the shadow of the bridge, and we flew. South along the Jersey Shore. And yes, Charlotte laughed. She stood and shuffled to the bow, holding on to the deck lines in a sensible way, and stood up there with her arms outstretched and her hair flying. I smiled and focused on piloting a clean line over the low swells, which were coming in from the east. By paying attention to the swells and veering smoothly to stay on a beam reach along the back of one for as long as possible, then jogging to the left up and over to the next one to the east, and then staying on that one also for as long as possible. Our course came very close to transcending the swell and being a perfectly smooth ride, feeling something like one of the harbor ferries, but very much faster. I had no idea if Charlotte was sensitive to the swell or not, but the last thing I wanted now was for her to get seasick. And the truth is that I myself don't have any great stomach for the ocean's up and down, be it heavy or slight, so I like to minimize the effect when I can. And there's nothing like the sheer water for doing that, because speed helps somehow. And today the swell was not that large, so we flew. After a while, she came back to the cockpit and sensibly got in the wind shelter under the glassine half shell. I was in the airflow pocket at the stern, seated and twiddling the wheel with one little finger. "Champagne," I suggested.
"You shouldn't drink and drive," she said.
"You drink for both of us.
When we land, or throw anchor, whatever."
In the cockpit's air pocket, the sound of the motor and the shearing of the foils through the water were all as subdued as the wind. We could talk, and did. The Jersey Shore was low and autumnal, not with bright New England colors, but more a brown, sludgy tone, never very high over the horizon. Possibly the hurricane had ripped all its leaves away, too. The East Coast was very obviously a drowned coastline. It had been like that even before the floods, and now more than ever. From our angle, it looked like land on this planet was an afterthought. Charlotte got a call and took it. She glanced at me as she listened, mouthed FedEx with her hand over the speaker, then nodded as she listened.
"Yeah, I'm on my way down now. By boat."
"My boatman?"
"Yeah, the captain of my yacht."
"All congresspeople get a yacht, didn't you know that?"
"No, I know."
"Listen, you said you would need help in Congress, so now I'm there."
"No, of course not. But it's not just me. I've been talking around the new members, and there's a lot of them like me. It makes sense, right? Because now's the time."
"I hope you're right."
"I'll try, sure."
"Shit, yes, we'll back you. Just keep the president in line and it'll happen. You're the crucial figure in what gets tried. It's fiscal policy." Then she listened for a long time. After a while, she began to roll her eyes at me. She put her finger on her wrist pad's microphone.
"He's giving me all the reasons he can't do it," she said under her breath. "He's chickening out."
"Tell him the Paulson story," I suggested.
"What do you mean? What about Paulson?"
Quickly and urgently, I outlined the story for her. She nodded as I spoke. When I was done, she took her finger off the mic. Suddenly, her look was fierce. Her tone of voice likewise. She snapped.
"Listen, Larry. I understand all that, but it doesn't matter. Do you understand? That doesn't matter. Now's the time for you to be bold and do the right thing. It's your moment, and you don't get to do it over again if you get it wrong. And people will remember. Do you remember Paulson, Larry? He's remembered as a chicken and a sleaze, because when the whole system was going down, he ran up to New York and told his friends he was going to nationalize Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae right after he told everyone else he wasn't going to. So his friends sold their shares while they were still worth something, and everyone lost big time."
"What?"
"Yes, it would have been insider trading if he had had any investment in that stuff himself, but as it was, he was just helping his friends. And now that's all he's remembered for. All. Nothing else. Your biggest move is what you get remembered for, Larry. So if it's a bad one, that's it. So fucking do the right thing."
She listened to her ex for a while and then laughed shortly.
"Sure. You're welcome."
"Anytime.
Talk to you later.
Hang in there and do the right thing." She clicked the phone off and grinned at me, and I grinned back.
"You're tough," I said.
"I am," she said. "And he deserves it. Thanks for the story."
Seemed like it was time for the stick.
It was.
"So now you're an advisor to the chair of the Fed."
My FedEx, she said. Well, he likes to be able to ignore me. I tell him what to do. He ignores me. It'll be like old times. But he's doing what you told him to do this time, right? We'll see. I think he'll do what the situation forces him to do. I'm just clarifying what that is. Actually, you are.
It sounds way better coming from you.
I don't see why.
Because you're a realistic person, and he knows that.
Maybe. He thinks I've gone nuts, grinding in the city as long as I have.
Which is true, right?
She laughed. Yes, it is. Maybe I do want that champagne.
Good for you. I checked the ocean ahead and clicked on the autopilot, then went to the hatchway to the cabin, tousling her wild hair very briefly as I passed her. Someone has to have the ideas, I said down in the cabin.
I thought that was you, she called down the hatch.
I did too, I said as I came back up. But these other ideas you've been talking about lately don't sound familiar to me, so I'm thinking it's not me, more like Karl Marx. She snorted.
If only. I think at best it's Keynes, but that's okay. It's a Keynesian world. Always has been.
I shrugged. He was a traitor, right?
She laughed. I guess everybody's a traitor.
I'm not so sure about that. I unwrapped the foil and wire from the champagne bottle, very old-fashioned, very French, and then aimed the cork to the side and sent it flying to leeward. Poured her a mason jar glass and sipped from it myself before giving it to her.
Cheers,
she said, and clinked her jar to the bottle I was holding. Then after she had drunk about half her glass, and I was back to steering, or at least supervising the autopilot, she got another call.
Who's this?
Oh.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to hear from you. Yes, I'm really looking forward to it. It's a very exciting time.
Yes, it is.
Yes, that's right. We were married when we were young, and we're still friends.
Yes.
He is very good, yes.
She laughed, seeming a bit giddy. I thought the champagne had gone to her head, but then realized who it must be.
Well, he was so brilliant we had to get divorced.
Yes, one of those. It was like nuclear fission.
Or is it fusion? Anyway, that was a long time ago. But now we talk, yes. He has the right ideas, I think.
Yes, there's a big group of us in the House, and I think in the Senate, too.
What? The court? Haven't you packed the court already?
I could hear the laugh coming from her phone, a familiar-sounding soprano cackle.
Okay, I look forward to meeting you. Thanks again for calling.
She let the phone fall to the bench, stared at the Jersey Shore, then out to sea. The president? I asked.
Yes.
I thought so. What did she want?
Support.
Of course, but... Wow. She looked at me and smiled.
It may actually get interesting.
Late in the day, it got colder and the swell a bit higher, and I let the shearwater down and brought it into shore, looking to spend the night at a marina in Ocean City Bay, where I could recharge the batteries and take off at dawn. The harbor master radioed to say there was a space in the visitor's slips, so as the sun was going down behind the Maryland shore, I puttered in behind the floating seawall and followed the harbor master's gestures into a slip. She tied off at one cleat. I tied the other. And there we were. Once the battery's charger was plugged in, Charlotte and I walked up to a restaurant with its windows overlooking the marina. The Highway 50 terminus. Nice view. I could have barbecued on the boat, but didn't want to. This was nicer, and we needed a break. Needed the space for a while. We talked over dinner. Not just money and politics, but music and the city. She had been born and brought up in the Lincoln Towers, right on the Hudson. She listened to my stories of Oak Park, Illinois, and we ate seafood on pasta and drank a bottle of white wine. She watched me closely, and yet I didn't feel observed or judged. I tried to make it clear that trading had interested me as a puzzle to be solved, a story to be pulled together out of the data. I explained my theory of the screen and its multiple simultaneous genres, giving when taken altogether a glimpse into the global mind, a hive mind.
Like history, she said as I tried to describe it.
Yes, but visible on a screen. History as it's happening.
And quantified, so you can bet on it.
Yes, that's right. History made into a betting game.
I guess it always is. But is that good?
I shrugged. I used to think so. I enjoyed it as such. But now I'm thinking it has to be more than just something to bet on. With this building project, it's more, I don't know,
making history.
Maybe so. Making something, anyway.
Did you get what you wanted when you went out to see Ramirez?
Well, I bought him out, and he let me do it. I suppose that was because his security contractors had been breaking the law. I may have burned a bridge there, I don't know. He said we'd be seeing each other again. I don't know what to think of that.
They won't go away, she said, regarding me with a little smile.
Was I naive? Did I still have things to learn? Was she regarding me fondly? Yes to all. I felt confused in so many ways. But that look, it made me smile. It shouldn't have, but it did. It was a fond look. When we got up to return to the boat, I felt good, full, a little tipsy. Listened to. And I too had listened. We walked back down the slipways arm in arm. I turned on the boat's lights and showed her down into the cabin. Showed her the two beds tucked into either side of the narrow space down the cabin's middle. Her bags were on the guest bed, and she put them onto the shelf over the bed, dug around and pulled out a bathroom bag and some kind of clothing. I guess it was her pajamas. She left them on her bed and we went back up to the cockpit and sat under a few stars, fuzzy in the salt air. I had scotch, but left it down below. We didn't need it. Heads back on the rail, shoulder to shoulder. Okay. I liked her. And more than that, I wanted her. Did that mean I was falling for power? Was it really true then that power is sexy? I couldn't really buy it, not even then and there, looking at her and feeling that she looked good. Power comes out of the end of a gun, Mao said very cogently. And the end of a gun is not sexy, not if you are a normal person who values your life and thinks of sex as fun and guns as sick and disgusting. No, power is not sexy. But Charlotte Armstrong was sexy. So, but what did that mean? 16 years older, holy shit. When I myself was 60 and hopefully still thoroughly hale and hearty, even at that admittedly elderly age, she would be 76 years old, ack! An inhuman number. If I got to a lucky 70, she would be 86 and deeply, deeply ancient. Up and down the years, the discrepancy was like a Grand Canyon between us. But now was now. And by the time we got to that future point, I figured either she would have seen through me and broken up with me, or I would have caught a cancer and died, or more likely she would die and leave me bereft and seeking consolation with some 30-year-old. I would be like one of those horrible Margaret Mead, Robert Heinlein line marriages and first marry someone way too old for me, then someone way too young. It sounded awful. What was I going to do? Some people get lucky and partner up with someone the same age. They know the same songs, have the same references and all that. Good for them. But for the rest of us, it's catch as catch can. And just thinking of her kicking ass in the nation's dismal swamp was making me laugh. It was going to be funny. Come on, I said after a long silence.
Let's go below.
Why? Why what? You know why. to have sex. Sex, she scoffed, as if she didn't believe in it, or had forgotten what it was. But there was a sly little smile tugging up the corners of her mouth, and when I kissed her, I learned very quickly that she knew perfectly well what sex was.
The city seen from the Queensborough Bridge is always the city seen for the first time, in its first wild promise of all the mystery and the beauty in the world. F. Scott Fitzgerald.
F. Amelia. Over New York Harbor, a calm spring day, year 2143. Cloudless, visibility 40 miles. Amelia took Stefan and Roberto and Mr. Hexter up in the assisted migration and ordered Franz to ascend to 2,000 feet to have a good look at the bay. Mr. Hexter was excited to be getting to see the city from this marvelous vantage point and planned to take photos for some kind of mapping project he was contemplating. The boys were happy to come along and catch the view, see if any muskrats could be seen from the air. "I see them all the time," Amelia said. "You'll love the telescopes Franz has on board." As they made their ascent, the boys and Mr. Hexter toured the gondola, with Amelia explaining everything, including the claw marks made by her polar bears, which she could now point at with only a brief plunge into sadness. It was just one of the bad parts of the past. In her campaigns on behalf of animals and habitat corridors, she had experienced many reversals and witnessed a lot of suffering, and often death. Now, as she drew her hands down the scratch marks and showed how the bears must have fallen down the suddenly vertical hallways, she could put that foolish moment in context. Category? Amelia's dumb moves. Extrication from. It was a big category. It was not that particular moment that had been the bad one. "Let's have lunch," she said, after the boys and Mr. Hexter had marveled. They gathered in the glass-bottomed bow of the gondola and looked down at the city as they ate tofu burgers that Amelia had prepared on her kitchen stove.
"How many miles have you traveled in this thing?" Mr. Hexter asked.
"I think it's a million now," Amelia said. She asked Franz, and the airship's calm, Germanic voice said,
"We have traversed 1,200,018 miles together."
Hexter whistled briefly.
"That's like 50 times around the world, if you were going around the equator. So it must have been more times than that."
"I think so. I've lived up here for a long time. It's kind of like my little sky village. A sky cottage, I guess you'd call it. There were some years when I didn't come down at all."
"Like the Baron in the trees?" Hexter said.
"Who was that?"
"A young Baron who climbed into the forest in Italy and never came back to the ground again for his whole life, supposedly."
"Well, I did that too, for a few years."
"Years?"
"That's right. Something like, I don't know, 7 years? Hexter and the boys stared at her.
"You stayed up here alone for 7 years? Hexter said.
Amelia nodded, feeling herself blush.
"Why?"
Roberto asked. She shrugged and blushed more. "I was never really sure. I wanted to get away. I guess I didn't really like people. Some bad things had happened, and I just wanted to get away. So I did. And then I started doing the assisted migration stuff. And I found I could talk to people from up here, in ways that made them seem okay. I got used to talking to people again from doing it up here in the cloud. And then one time I came through New York, and the mooring at the Met was available. And I met with Vlade, up in the cupola. And I liked him. I felt comfortable around him. So then it went on from there." The guys contemplated this story.
"Does Vlade know the part he played in reeling you in?" Mr. Hexter asked.
"No, I don't think so. He knows we're friends. But people, I don't know. They think I'm more normal than I really am. They don't really see me.
We see you, Roberto declared.
Yes, you do. They talked about animals she had seen. She had a list somewhere, she said, but she didn't want to get into that. Let's look for new ones now. They floated over the city. It was in every direction a great sheet of water, with some giant stickle-backed sea serpents eeling around the bay. Manhattan, Hoboken, Brooklyn Heights, Staten Island. Land lay in the distance everywhere, green and flat, except to the south, where the Atlantic gleamed like a dull old mirror. Look, the old man said as he peered through one of the telescopes.
I think I see a pod of porpoises. Or could they be orcas, do you think?
I don't think orcas come in the harbor, Amelia said.
But they look so big.
They do, don't they? But we're pretty low. Maybe they're river dolphins. I know some were introduced here from China to try to keep them from going extinct. Cetacean backs in the water, smooth and supple, hard to figure because of their black and white striping. About 20 of them, rising to the surface and blowing like whales. Mr. Hexter? I think they're Melville's whales. They've come to get him.
Good idea,
Hexter said, smiling. As they hummed north over the Hudson, they could see that the waterline of the Jersey Shore was still a bit icy.
Shores like that are where we'll have the best chance to see beaver or muskrat homes,
Hexter said, peering through his telescope.
Scan the shore there.
The boys did that for a while, then looked through the telescopes down at the city. The docks were mostly back, centipeding Manhattan's shores. The uptown towers flared emerald, lemon, turquoise, indigo. Where's your marsh? Amelia asked.
There by that skinny tall building, Roberto said.
Oh, that skinny tall building.
Sorry, the purple one, right east of it. It used to be a creek there, called Mother David's Valley. It should make a good salt marsh, with maybe a couple of Mr. Gar's raft buildings on it to study it and take care of it.
I'm glad you're doing that, but don't you have to be an adult to own property?
I don't know. Anyway, we're a holding company.
I thought you were an institute, Mr. Hexter said.
You're in it too. That's right, the Institute for Manhattan Animal Studies.
I thought it was the Institute of Stefan and Roberto, Hexter said.
That's just what you call it. I wanted to call it the Institute for Homeless Animals, but I got outvoted.
That's because animals always have homes, Stefan explained again.
So is it true that these towers are mostly occupied now? Amelia asked, diverting them from what looked to be an ongoing dispute.
I heard that they are, Mr. Hexter said. The new absentee tax is pretty persuasive. Between that and the capital assets taxes, they're either being occupied or sold to people who will occupy them. And I think a new city law requires low-income housing in all of them. Even the mayor is jumping on that bandwagon. I read that one floor of the cloister cluster can be turned into rooms that house 600 people.
How do they add plumbing for that many?
That must be all those exterior pipes.
They look silly.
I like them. There was something dreadful about those towers. Their line was too clean. Better to add a little texture. More New York.
More sewage.
Exactly my point.
I like the clean lines, Amelia said. New York has always had clean lines. From their height, the people crowding the uptown sidewalks and plazas were the size of small ants. Theirs was a plentiful species. Can there really be enough apartments for all those people? Amelia asked.
Hexter shook his head. A lot of them come in for the day, just like always.
But a lot of them must live there, too.
Sure. Packed in like sardines, as they say.
like clams in a clam bed. I wonder why. I mean, it's good for the animals that people want to do it. But why? Why do people want it?
It's exciting, right?
Amelia shook her head. I can never get it.
You still like your blimp.
It's true. You can see why.
It's very nice. Are you headed out soon on another trip?
I think so. The Householders Union is asking me to make some kind of world tour. I'm just hoping it won't lead to more trouble.
Angry landlords taking pot shots at you?
Well, yeah. I'm getting a lot of hate mail. I don't like it. I wish I'd just stuck to animals sometimes. It was easier then. I mean, there was hate mail then, too. But mostly from people who didn't like assisted migration or animals, so I just ignored them. But now it's people who... I don't know.
It's just landlords and their lackeys,
Hexter said.
Ignore them, too. You're doing great. You're making a difference.
Amelia asked Franz to head south, just offshore from Manhattan, and they regarded the city in silence as they turned and floated by it. Mr. Hexter pointed down at Morningside Heights.
It's strange,
he said.
Down there is where the big riot last year happened, right? The battle for the towers. But it was also the crux of the battle for New York during the Revolutionary War. The United States could have died before it was born, right down there, if it weren't for that one.
What happened?
Roberto asked.
It was early in the revolution. Washington's army was being chased all over the bay by the British, who had lots of Hessian mercenaries and about 100 warships. The Americans were nothing but farmers with fowling guns and rowboats, so wherever the British landed, the Americans had to run away. First from Staten Island to Brooklyn. Then when the Brits followed them to Brooklyn, the whole American army rode across the East River one night in a fog. But then they were down in the Battery, where the town was in those days, and the British crossed the East River at Midtown. They could have marched across the island and cut the Americans off and forced them to surrender, but their general Howe was extremely slow. He was so slow that people have wondered if he was trying to lose. So the Tories would be embarrassed back in Parliament, because he was a Whig. Anyway, the Americans took advantage of this syrup head and snuck up Broadway one night, past the Brits who were camped around the UN building, and they reconvened up here at the north end of the island. They snuck up Broadway? It was just a country lane. They even lost it and snuck through the woods. It was a dark night, and it was all forest then. So anyway, the Americans made it up to here, and then the British followed them north. This time, they had the Americans caught at the north end of the island, and they marched up here to crush them. But as they were attacking, their buglers blew a fox hunting call, and that made some of the Americans mad. A group of riflemen from Marblehead, Massachusetts, stood their ground right down there and started to shoot back. It was the first time Americans had stood up to the Brits since Bunker Hill, and they fought them to a draw during the course of a long and bloody day. Right down there.
Cool, Roberto said.
So then they won? No, they lost. I mean, they were still going to get crushed. It was just a holding action for a day. So they slipped off the island again. They rowed over to Jersey and got away. And the British held Manhattan for the rest of the war. Remember the headquarters map? Remember the Hussar? All that happened after this battle we lost.
So what the hell? Roberto said. How did we win the revolution if we kept losing all the battles and running away?
That was the story of the war, Mr. Hexter said. The Americans lost all the battles, but won the war.
because when they lost, they were still here. It was their home. They would go off and regroup, and the British would follow them and beat on them again somewhere else. There were a couple American victories along the way.